One of those brilliant people is a lady called Tracy Field from Seaham, from starting her career at a call centre, a traffic warden, a safari park, overseeing a tiger house, choosing electrical socket placements with the Princess of Wales, to working overseas in Nigeria and the Falklands. A busy lady. However, I guess, was any of it as challenging as starting her own business? In her 50s, Tracy walked away from a secure job to start from scratch. At the same time, had to cope with a marriage breakdown and a huge move. She's written a book, and we'll chat about that in a bit, but I'm delighted to say that Tracy joins us now. Welcome to the show, Tracy. How are you doing?
I'm good. That was some welcome, wasn't it? Thank you.
It's a welcome. I don't actually know where to begin, Tracy.
I'm exhausted just listening to it.
So am I, but I'm also fascinated. I think it's really interesting to hear people's stories because it's inspirational for other people. So first of all, how did you get into the kind of the estate management? How did you end up going from call centre? Let's do the call centre bit first. Yeah.
So I always knew I wanted to be in property and construction and the built environment. Had my children when I was young.
Yeah.
So I got a job in a call centre for a housing association dealing with repairs in the houses, and thought that's a way to learn some of the terminology.
Yeah.
And then while I was there, I used to shadow the surveyors that were there in the afternoon. So I worked in the mornings, shadowed them in the afternoons and studied. And then got a job came up as a voids manager, and I got the position, and that was my first launch into actually doing a surveying role.
So I tell you what's interesting about that is that you showed curiosity and willing when you were there.
I was very keen.
Yeah, and that's, so you go in, I think a lot of people don't realise when you go into workplaces, when you're just, you know, you're starting out in workplaces, it's you're not going to fly straight to the top and see, that's not how it works. You have to learn the craft.
You do.
So you went in, you were curious, you were willing and hardworking at the call centre.
It was, and I think it doesn't come to you. So I had to, you know, be begging these people. I know you're going out on visits today. Can I please come with you? I want to learn as much as I can. And then doing the study on the side. So it's busy. You're raising a family, you're working, you're following people around, and then you're studying at the same time. So you've got to be committed, that's for sure.
Yeah. So that was the call centre. And then you became, did you call it a void manager?
A voids manager. So basically any property that became empty with the housing association, I went, worked out what needed to be done, managed the contractor to turn it around, to get a new person into the house. So when I started that job, the void turnaround times of the houses were empty for maybe, I think there was 93 days, which is a long time for a house to sit empty with families waiting.
Yeah.
By the time I was there within the first 6 months, we got it down to nine days. And that's just purely by good management and, you know, communication stuff.
Now that's interesting. So if you were looking at that, how did you turn that around and make it happen quickly? Because I'm just thinking about people listening to the show now. Not everybody's going to be doing the same job, but sometimes if we use the same kind of attributes and ideas, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's true. So for me, it was making sure, one, you go out there quickly once you know it's vacant, so don't sit there for ages waiting for it.
So if you've got a problem, get straight onto it immediately. Wondering and being indecisive about a problem.
Just head on. And I was really clear about what the expectation was that needed to be done. So if I was getting a contractor to do work, I was really clear about what I expected, when I expected it by, the quality that it had to be there, and I was on them all the time. So you can't just send somebody away to do it and then think they're just going to do it without you checking back. So,
that sounds, that's lots
I was
of people.
Probably a contractor's worst nightmare.
It's funny that, because lots of people listening be thinking, oh God, the lad said he was going to turn up on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, and then he never.
And you didn't realise until the week after. So you have to follow up on these things all the time. But so it's, and again, it's all about communication with others and realising that what you're doing isn't just, it's just not that building. And the same thing as I take in now and we'll cover later in the book, but it's about the people that it affects that are going into that property, you know, and their life. So it's really important to get it right.
Yeah. So you've kind of flew up, and I can see why from the attributes that you've got. So where did the working with the Princess of Wales and Kate come from? How did you go from doing that job to ending up in the royal household?
So I moved to a couple of local authorities, housing associations, just to get experience from one to the other. And I was, I got a position as a surveyor at the Bedford Estates in Woburn. So that's the Duke of Bedford. So I managed Woburn Abbey, Woburn Safari Park, and all the commercial and residential properties there.
My dad took me there when I was nine, so that means place, quite a lot to me. Yeah,
to get some good freebies at the safari park. Gorgeous,
it's like the tigers and all of that.
The first project over there of mine was a new tiger pen, actually. So that was quite cool. So I'd done that, and then I managed the stonework replacement at Woburn Abbey.
Yeah.
And it was the same time I was writing my dissertation for my degree, so I'd done it all around that. And then I was contacted by, you know, somebody, there's a job going at the Royal Household, went over and, yeah, got a job as a building surveyor project manager at the Royal Household.
So are you just wandering around and then the princess comes up with her beautiful hair and a fancy wellies and just says, oh, I'd like the socket there.
It was literally on day one. So there's a lady in the office, Gabriella, and she'd never met anybody really. She was just in the office, and on day one, she's, you know, staunch royalist. And I get back and I say, you won't believe who I've meeting today. So on day one, yeah, as we go in, there she is. Yeah, so it was a little bit tongue-tied to start with. But yeah, so my first project was managing the refurbishment of Kensington Palace. So that was phenomenal. We're working on all of the London palaces. But yeah, many
really?
A meeting. You know, where do you want this? But there was a safe there that we couldn't get into. So we had to, you know, get the locksmith in and try and open this safe. And we're all standing around it thinking, I wonder what's in there. It was empty.
Oh, like, that's so disappointing. I'm imagining there's like crown jewels in there
and
all
sorts. Exactly. We thought there'd be something really major. But yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, I was lucky to work on all London palaces. So, you know, dressing room for Camilla. I done, you know, the valet room for Prince Charles.
Do they come and talk to you and say, I just wonder how, and
so
people listening might want to know how these kind
so
of things work.
They don't necessarily tell you direct, but you have dealings with them while you're doing work because it's for them, you know? So you will interact or you'll pass them, you know, while you're going around. So they're just
people, aren't they, I suppose?
Just people you did a job for. Yeah, Harry was doing a charity cricket thing, so I remember preparing all the ground for him at the park, you know, and it's just a strange thing, isn't it, of all the other side to them that you don't see, maybe.
Yeah,
you know,
just
day to day,
just real people.
Yeah, absolutely. And then ultimately, though, that's what the big buildings become. They're just a building, the same as, you know, it's amazing the architecture, the history, and all of that. But they still have asbestos. They still have damp. They still have electrics that need, you know, replacing or whatever.
Need hoovering.
Yeah, they do. They do. But my friend, going back to Gabriella, we played Royal Bingo, because, you know, just to see who we could meet. And then I trumped it completely when the Queen. I had a conversation with her on one evening. She came in and walked through, and she said, "I understand you've been doing the valet room." And I literally was like, so a colleague just let me settle for a moment. And then I could have this conversation. But yeah, she was amazing. Yeah, won the bingo.
You did one that she's not going to get better than that. And was she a sweet lady?
Yeah, amazing, absolutely. Yeah, lovely, really
awesome.
Lovely woman.
And who was easier to work with, the royal family or the tigers?
Some of the royal family and the tigers.
Yeah, and the tigers. Well, it's a fascinating career path.
Yeah.
So that all happens. Everything's going swimmingly well. And then, as people will understand from listening to you, and if you've just joined us, we're chatting to Tracy, who's had an extraordinarily varied career, completely changed in her 50s, and we just think it's inspirational, isn't it, to hear stories of people kind of changing. You then move from the Northeast, so that's like a broken down marriage, and you leave the South, leave your job, and come to the Northeast.
So in between that, I went and worked in the Falkland Islands. So I went over there for 3 years, living and working over there, and the contract ended, and then I was married then at that time, and then I went to Lagos in Nigeria and was working there.
Gosh, that's such different environments.
It's very different. Very different. I mean, they're great, you know, learning experiences for life and appreciating what you've got and how hard it is for, you know, for some people.
What did you learn from both places, kind of independently?
Falklands is about, you don't need everything you think you need, so you need to be resourceful. So I remember coming home once from a rotation, and my daughter said, "What are you wearing?"
Really?
Literally, they're the only clothes I can get. I didn't care.
You didn't.
You don't worry about it so much, about you haven't got your makeup on, your hair done, or whatever, because things that come in the Falklands is all on a supply ship that comes in every 3 months. So if you run out, you run out. You know, it's just it's yeah. Just how it is.
They haven't got a River Island and an M&S.
Exactly that. There is one shop
and
there
a Barry's
that sells
Bargains.
Old you know British Home Stores clothes or
that's it
or CNA as it used to be. Then yeah.
How
and
funny! Then, so it's about people, the people, and what you are as a person,
and yeah, and being just yourself and getting back to nature, and you know, it's an amazing place to go and see.
Yeah, the penguins are going to be looking at you, but nobody else.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was fortunate then that I went to Antarctica from there because obviously I'm never going to be as close as I am going to there. But then Lagos, Nigeria, taught me about again the value of people, and you don't have to have lots of money to be nice to somebody or
kind.
You know, yeah, exactly, just be nice. So I had a lovely driver, Coyote, and his one job was just to keep me safe, and you yeah. know, and he did. So I supported with his children in school, just try and give something back to him. He looked after me, made sure I was all right.
Yeah.
But you just see how hard some people really do have it. We moan and groan a lot. And I still do it now. Of course we do, because it's just human nature, isn't it?
But a lot of the time we shouldn't.
We shouldn't, really, because if you look at, you know, how people are living, you know, my driver, Coyote, him, his wife, four children, sister, husband, her children living in a one-bedroom property, no running water, you know, no power, everything, generator. Yeah, we have it easy, really, don't we, in comparison.
It's a very, very different life.
Yes.
If you have just joined us on BBC Radio Newcastle, I'm chatting to Tracy. She's written a book. The book is called Leading and Managing an Education Estate, A Practical Guide. Now, we know that not everybody is going to manage huge estates and palaces and things, but I bet you there's all sorts that you can learn in that. We're going to chat very shortly about that book, about what she's doing right here in the Northeast. And you are very welcome to join in on any of our subjects or any questions that you've got. 81333. Start your messages with BBC. We've got Blondie on the way for you and Hosier as well. Thank you so much for being with us. I've got a great guest with me today. Imagine going from a call centre worker to a traffic warden to working in a safari park to overseeing a tiger house being built to choosing electrical sockets for the Princess of Wales and then going to Nigeria and then the Falklands. And you know what? A varied career might just be the way forward. Well, my guest this morning is a brilliant lady, Tracy, who has written a fantastic book, and we're going to chat all about the book in two ticks. It's called Leading and Managing an Education Estate, A Practical Guide. Now, we chatted a moment ago, Tracy, about how you were in the South, you were doing all these incredible things, working, sorting out palaces, where they're going to put the sockets and, you know, where the wardrobes are going to go, all that kind of stuff. How do you leave that part of your life and the geography and come back up north? Or up north?
Up north. So I was in Lagos then, in Nigeria. I came home on the Christmas. I was married at the time, and yeah,
it broke up.
With moments notice. Yeah, it was just told like that. Yeah, he had someone else. It's fine. I know, men. Not all of them,
but some of them. So, and that's tough to go through.
It was really hard. It was really hard. So, but I'm quite pragmatic and
stoic.
Yeah, sometimes I can be. So I just thought, well, I need to find somewhere to live. So because I was based in Nigeria, to be honest, it didn't matter where I lived in the country. So I just kept going north and north until I could find a house without a mortgage.
Well, that's interesting. So, I mean, there's so many joys to be found living in the north. There's space. I was chatting to a really cool couple yesterday. They've done some amazing stuff in North Shields, and they'd come from East London and, you know, very hip, kind of hip, cool area. Mm. And they were just saying it's work-life balance in the northeast. There's a chance that you might not have to, I mean, you might have to work, but people do work very hard, but this crazy commute from central London, masses and masses of people, there's a space to be had, and there's a bit of a work-life balance. So it's a joyful place to be, the Northeast, I think.
It is, for sure, but as soon as I moved up here, I don't know whether it's the air, the people, I literally felt at home and thought, this is where I want to be. Oh. So I decided at that point that I'll come home as such and won't work overseas anymore. So that was my point of deciding to leave my job in Nigeria.
And that was it, home
and,
here.
And I was home here, yeah. So, so then I moved to Seaham. I moved to Trimden when I first moved up, and then moved to my house now in Seaham, so by the sea. It's Yeah, absolutely love it. But got the job at Bishop Chadwick Catholic Education Trust as estates manager. And that was my first step then into education estates. And what an eye opener.
So you look after schools essentially and school buildings kind of all across the whole of the Northeast.
So Bishop Chadwick, who I worked for, was a multi-academy trust of 30 schools.
Wow.
So that's schools across South Tyneside, Sunderland and Durham. But there's other multi-academy trusts here who have similar numbers of schools. So my job was everything from building compliance, safety, project management, anything to make sure that school stayed open, was safe, fit for purpose for our young people and our staff in the schools.
And of course, then you have like huge issues like the rack, for example. My goodness. So did that affect the schools that you worked
for? It did, yeah. There were four schools affected. So two of them are now on the school rebuilding programme because of that. So they had temporary works carried out to make them safe, but they were closed for months and months. So pupils displaced into other schools or colleges. It was a dreadful time. Teachers were amazing though. Staff are amazing, aren't they, at being resilient. And so are children, to be honest, at being resilient of that. But so they had lots of work done and now on the rebuilding. And then a couple of schools had more extensive roof work replacements. But it's a shock.
When you talked about it being an eye-opener, is that to do with the funds that schools get and the kind of state of repair that schools in the Northeast are in? Because, you know, we're always kind of fighting for a bit of the pot in the Northeast, I think.
I think that's right. So I don't think I realised how bad our school, our education estate was, schools, how bad they are and how little funding they actually get, or the pot of capital money that a multi-academy trust gets for 30 schools is minor. You've only got to have one school with a roof replacement and you've effectively wiped out all of that. And if it's okay, if I'll mention, then there's a fund called Condition Improvement Fund, which schools in the Northeast don't tend to apply for.
But can they?
They can apply. So they can apply every year for that. And the window is in usually around late October. But last year, the CIF, it's known as CIF, last year only 13% of Northeast schools qualified for funding from this pot of money. Now, I can't imagine it's because all of the Northeast schools are in such great condition that they didn't need it. It's probably more to do with the fact that they don't understand the information that they need to be able to put a successful bid in.
And that's where you come in.
And this is where I come in, yeah. So, I mean, I've got a LinkedIn account and I've put on there that I'll support 5 schools for free with looking at what they need to assess if they could put in a CIF bid. So, contact me after this.
That's incredible, Tracy.
I've got grandchildren who go to Northeast schools.
Yeah.
You know, it means a lot to me. You obviously want our young people to have the best environment possible.
And it does make a difference. Oh, if you're in a lovely, bright, airy classroom, you've got great facilities. It does make a difference to how you feel. And, you know, whatever anybody's thoughts on private education, a lot of those children get to go to school in amazing places. And it should be every kid that gets that chance.
They really should. But I mean, some of it isn't even just what it looks like, the decoration. It's the basics. The boiler's not consistent. You know, the roof is leaking continually. The electrics haven't been updated. All of these things are just basic things that should be done. There is insufficient government funding to get them done. But there are routes that schools can go down to try and get some additional funding.
They just need to know
They need to know that, yeah.
And that's where you come in. So the book, the book is called, it's got a long title, Leading and Managing an Education Estate, A Practical Guide. Yes. So who's the book aimed at then, Tracy? Is it aimed at people that work in schools?
It's aimed at anybody who is involved in the education sector in schools, whether that's a head teacher. People always think of estates and think it's the site manager, the estates manager that maintains and manages a school. And it isn't. Everybody's responsible. So the trustees, governors, CEOs, COOs, everyone has their part to play. And it's more about people. I said about this earlier, that people make a difference in a building. It's not just bricks and mortar.
Yeah.
There's so much more to it than that. And if leadership aren't talking about the problems or, you know, planning forward for those problems, then they're never going to get better. And the priorities go on other things because they're unseen. That no one knows a roof's bad until the water's coming through.
Yeah.
So, you know, it needs to be...
We had a waterfall in here not long ago.
Yes. So it needs to be high on the agenda. So my book is written in such a way that for each chapter, there's 19 chapters in the book. It started off originally as a little guide for estate managers and it just grew arms and legs because I realised it needs so much more than that. But each chapter starts with who it's for and why.
Yep.
And then goes into the detail, practical hints and tips. And I've got resources that people can use that are on my website that they can download to support them with that. And at the end of every chapter, it gives a leadership insight of what you can do as a leader to support, you know, X, Y, and Z, whether it's compliance, a project, you know, whether it's your emergency planning. All of these things are covered in this book.
Or even sorting out your own home.
Even sorting out your own home. Yeah, that all comes down to good project management sometimes as well, doesn't it?
That's quite interesting. Planning and project management, yes. For people listening who don't run schools. But I also think it's very interesting. There will be lots of people in education that are listening. Tracy, it's been a real joy chatting to you.
Thank
if people
you.
Want to find you, where can they find you on your website?
So Tracy with an EY, tracyfieldconsulting.com.
Fantastic. Tracy, really interesting
thank
to chat.
You. Thank you
so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. And